has to be a car because it's it. We had plans starting at the beginning, but that's usually a bit boring, so in case Jennifer has to go, we'll start by reading a poem that Paul McCartney is going to publish in Salford. Evening, yeah. Sorry about that, I was overly hot. Evening, and it's in two parts. One, the day is signed off with a forward slash of a disinterested moon. Its shy, diminutive flourish sits askance the southern sky, its nail clipping of light a rent in the tent of dark. Unaware, unperturbed by our damp darkness, it indifferently slides behind the closing clouds, turning its back on us, its blade face to the sun, a fragile signature of light. And part two takes images from the German folk poem Stillan. It's a bit bleak, but that was his life, Nick. Black milk of daybreak played his lifelong fugue. They were already digging a grave in the evening sky. Hope as dry as almonds, never enough to live by. Shoals being trawled away under a mackerel sky. He chiseled out blackened words as freight trains trundled under a darkening sky. A chorus of crows, a calling calligraphy, all skyping together against the hairs of Celtic sky. And then we'll go back to where we intended starting. And this is the book, Touching Stones. So I'll read some of the poems about my childhood, and then we'll go into a poem inspired by work. Feeling the Edge. This is in three short parts. As I said, I keep them short. One, before the mains came, she had drawn water in a galvanized bucket from the well below Crows. Strong, purposeful strides up the narrow road, leaning against the pull of the weight sloshing at her side. Mounting it on an oilcloth-covered box in the kitchen, an enameled jug dipped into cold spring water. Two, on January days like these, a darkness settling, days struggling to stretch, he'd be cutting timber, knocking a tree in Kelly's ash or rock-hard elm, stacked waiting in the plot to summer walk for us boys. The bandsaw upended on his lap, the file rasping the teeth one way, then the other, his fingers feeling the edge. Three. Often in the quiet of night, images surface, hover, sometimes heavy, cow slow, clean globules of memory. Word pictures to develop rounded and well sprung, solid as his elm block. Settled as her full bucket, forever there, printed headstones testifying, slaking the thirst of grief, stoking the fire of love. And it's difficult to know how much you should kind of mind the whole childhood. Some people can do very well, and sometimes they come off. I'm not sure how long and how to stretch out sometimes. But a short one from school, remembering school days in praise, is just remembering a teacher that we had in primary school that really kind of helped get me going as fast. We all knew about the fuchsia bells blooming against the old stone wall. We all knew about the wet coats smothering in the dark closets. We all knew about the dry toilets, the plopped lining after the settled travellers cleaned them out. But it took a little longer to know what you, the new teacher, brought to that old schoolhouse in Dunnesdee. Posters with newfangled Velcro, spelling contests against older classes, the first book, prize and praise that opened an enormous bright space. We're reading something called Skittles. Sure, you play Skittles in the court as well, do you? Skittles. In a glance, you can see him hunkered, crouched at the throw line. The ring of Skittles standing on a circle painted on the road. He wanted to cut the Skittle off its spot. A furious, swirling throw just in over the twig garden, the short line. The short sleeves rolled up, the smell of milk and cow shit. Strong arms that piped hay, cut timber, cycled to matches. The Skittle, 3 inches of ash splattering into the air, into the grass, striking green scuff marks on the whitewash. Until many years later, time stood on the throw line, holding death in its hands. Mercifully, there was no slow lobs, no foul throws. The death came swiftly, assuredly, pitching him, taking him, cutting him clear. Sometimes some words they just won't come out in my mind. Looking up, John Montague seems to have the same issue. And he had written a few words on the back of the book, but this is about that. It's called Abstinence. Last night it came back to me in a dream, 20 years later, standing in that end classroom crying, my stammer balking at the long wet crag of abstinence in a catechism lesson. I was stood alone through lunch as others came in for choir practice, watching the bleached desktop scarred with blotches of ink, line flaking off the walls, the full sounds of Latin hymns. The mistress walking, conducting, her hair knotted in a grey bun, chalk dust on her lips, forming neat letters on the blackboard, motioning me to stand and wait as I slipped back to hollow sobs. Switching back from that. I'm kind of working on a manuscript. We've got some of it together. A poem called Flagstone. The guy on the tractor with a reversible plough will not feel even the slightest indentation when he glides through the ground or the house that stood for nearly 200 years. We'd seen the men last week separating the rubble into a heap, burning the rotted rafters, removing the corrugated iron, and later the loads of topsoil levelled and raked at stones. But you couldn't help but hope that the flagstone to the front door is not dumped in some damp ditch. The flagstone faced the road, faced west, scratched by hobnailed boots, polished by centuries of leather. A storage heater of evening sun, a seat sought by cats and dogs, the threshold over which the bride was carried with excitement, and later caused the men to stumble as they carried out the coffin. And we will, I will read some poems inspired by work. I always keep mixing up that saying that Dennis O'Driscoll had about a variation of all work and no play makes Jackie Doyle by, but all reading and no work link makes Jackie Doyle poet, something like that. But he certainly lived by it. Maestrometer, 52. Maestrometer. I have a Maestrometer which I carry in my car. It's great when testing for rising damp in old houses, testing for moisture ingress around chimney flashings, and for being certain of the extent of damage from burst pipes. Its display is three lights, much like traffic lights. The green one indicates that decay is impossible. The orange light means decay is possible, whilst red tells me that decay is inevitable. When I put my finger across the sharp terminals, I am always startled as the instant red light. And a shotgun called occupational therapy. There's no doubt about it. In a college somewhere, a kid is in training to be an occupational therapist. She's my daughter's age, on the phone to her folks, worried sick about her finals, but planning a year out to see Asia with a new boyfriend. Little does she know that I'm in training too, for when she comes back, gets married, settles down, she will assess me for the house adaptation grant. My list of qualifications will include coronary heart disease, irritable bowel syndrome, and of course that old chestnut hypertension. And this is the one called New Bar. You mentioned in the introduction that it got on okay in Strokestown last year when Tom McCarthy, Mary and Ellie were up. It's not easy to impress people like that, but the New Bar. Some years later, when they were fitting a new bar in the lounge, I was called in to consult with a fire officer about relocating one of the exit doors. He was a small, contrary little man with a well-toned copy of the building regulations, terrified of making his decision. I could talk to him, tease him about footballers, and some sense seemed to enlighten his head. The double doors out onto the square were open. The new bar had just arrived from the Giner's workshop. Its incense of resin and glue filled the strange emptiness of the space, the voices echoing, bouncing around the room. While they were stuck on some boring detail with the electrician about alarms and signs, the interior designer arrived with her samples. The builder stood up, straightening his back, and I wandered over to the spot inside the door where I had fallen in love with you that Friday night after a book launch. You standing, yapping, radiant and wild, tearing into someone about, was it politics, and of course reveling in my attention. But there wasn't a sign of it left there. The wallpaper steamed off, the carpets gone, floorboards lifted for new wires and pipes, even the very tiles you stood on, gone. And a sort of a few from my work base down the, or coming as we came through the Celtic Tiger, or a shopping called the Barbarians after the Greek guy, Gaddafi. I think a lot of people kind of left it, doing a version of his Barbarians. I think it's the irony of it that catches people. The Barbarians. We were so well prepared, with priests and curates in every little parish, reformatories to house the delinquent kids, laundries to take in the fallen girls, convents of nuns with sisters of mercy. We were so well prepared to fight the Barbarians. We had managers in banking in pinstripe suits, floodplains rezoned under a deluge of representations, builders stacking up shares in bloodstock, jeeps at the ready in every tarmac driveway. We were so well prepared. Slightly smart answer, but not. Could be serious as well as taking the Celtic Tiger called Icarus. That night, when he came home from the conference in the city, after spending 2 hours and €400 on a 20-something escort, and was not willing to have a shower in case it might arouse the suspicions of his sleeping wife, he knew he was playing with fire. Again, staying with the same guy as was in the yet another business seminar. Yet another business seminar. Here they come, the guys in shiny shoes, in well-cut suits with short back and sides, laptops slung over their shoulders, striding through the foyer with smartphones bleeping. Here are the guys who know the jargon, the BS numbers, the statutory instruments. These are the guys from sales and marketing, the managers, the bankers, the company directors, familiar with the trappings of the small print, upwardly mobile or down in their look. These are the guys on the corporate ladder, taking their chances, doing the business. These are the guys with mileage allowances, with crisp cuffs and meat wedding bands. These are the guys who trawled online and caught you in those fishnet tights. These are the guys striding across the Liffey Bridge for their half-hour appointment. These are the guys who will never know your name, nor care less if you're Italian or Brazilian. These are the guys taking their pound of flesh, paying their way, sealing the deal. These are the guys on the corporate ladder, taking their chances, doing the business. I'm never sure what an introduction to a poem should be. Sometimes you go to a poetry reading, the introduction is longer than the actual poem. And yet, the other hand, you go to poetry and the guy stands up, reads the poem, he doesn't say anything. So it's like a balance. Evening in Bath. What? In the Bath? In Bath. That beautiful town in England. Evening in Bath. That July evening in Bath, stepping out of a cafe onto the narrow footpath, a breeze restless, rustling, and then stepping back against the patient softness of the blue door, letting them pass, a couple holding hands, laughing in step together, so unaware of anything other than themselves, lost in their little bubble. It stalled, stranded something. Was that it? Was that all over? Was that part of my life done, gone away with? their bubble of hope blindly pushing off out into rapids, the white water rapids of love, to swirl, to twirl, to dance, to be carried away, swept off to something new, unknown, lost in the moment, in the now, to beach, to birth, to land. Hearing my name falling, my daughter excited from the bats, walking together the narrow streets to catch the train back to Bristol. Pieces from a kind of a long series of short poems called Gnostic Sands. The bit, I think the title is a bit arrogant, but I think it stands. So I won't go too much into it, I just read, give you a flavour of what it's about. The first part is called Electrical Installation. It is only today, when you asked about the core of the earth wire, did I realise the importance of being so securely earthed. And a part called Currency. My flip side is God, who softly as a coin slipped under my tongue, drew my every breath, giving life to this body, giving doubt to slip, giving me purchase grip down the slope to death. And one called Copernicus. If you remember him. What mattered most in the face of all the garbed and garbled words was that he followed through, that he knew what stood at the heart of his world. And this one called Listen, My Friends, is the last one I do from it. It's after the Indian mystic Mirabai called Listen, My Friends, yeah. If we could reach him through immersion in water, I'd have been born as a fish. If we could reach him through eating nuts and berries, I'd have been born as a monkey. If we could reach him through munching leaves, surely I'd have come as a goat. If worship of stone statues could bring us all the way, I'd adore a granite mountain. Listen, my friends, this road is the heart opening, kissing his feet, joy all night. We'll read three more. Are you okay? The last poem in the book is called Breaking Promises, and it takes sort of an image from a poem by Philip Larkin, but it kind of tries to twist it around a bit. Breaking Promises. Going for an early morning pee is to venture out into the realm of death. Lying awake in the dead of night when faces are corpsing and the silences float free into the clingy, foggy silence where death lives. The only dead certainty knows you're coming, leading you out into its empty embrace. Until somehow I remember to follow the tides of breath back within to that strong room of stillness, carrying me to a haven, brimming, teeming, where astonishingly the fog of death does not cling, the winds of death do not blow, the promises of death are not kept. This is just watching people in a pub, in a pub under night. Sunday night. The crowds pushed in, ordering drink. The empty glasses raised, time pushing on. Strong men with red faces and broad hands that could well whip a hurry, bowing their heads for the first mouthful. She sucked on a cigarette, blew smoke up past her eyes out of the way. Her hair dyed a light brown, fuzzed up on the top of her head, undecided it might be a fashion. Her high-heeled shoes felt the beat of the music in the concrete floor. Her jeans creased the outline of panties. Her breasts stood dangerously firm behind the screen of a blouse. A squall of laughter broke in a knot from the corner of her mouth as she tossed ash all over the floor. She poured another big bottle, darted glances across at the neighbours. Their hands reached for the pint glasses. Jokes broke and laughter rose. They saw her from the corners of their eyes, throwing her nods of recognition with very few words of salute. They could speak with an eye and answer with a nod, asking all of the questions with a look, a laugh, past drink, knowing all of the answer in the slapped knee, the loud laugh, the quick glance, the steady stare. We'll finish sort of back where we started. The one called Blueprints for My Father. It's in two parts. One is called January. There is no one now to measure the cock's step into the January evening, nor anybody to praise the shy snowdrops at the whitewashed wall. The firm handshake, the mischievous glint, and the unerring humour have so suddenly disappeared. Our last bastion of defence, we are bereft, orphaned. When his body was taken away, his locker emptied, cleaned out, there was an absence like nothing before. The landscape to the cliff edge of death suddenly appeared so windswept, so completely bare. And part two is called Tracing. He could trace all around him, tie up all the family connections, not only his mother's family, but every family in the parish, who had been left a farm by an uncle, who had married in and from where. He could tell the layout of the old graveyard in Clonohill, knew who owned all the plots, almost lost in the high grass. The other day in the office, reaching for the tracing paper, revising the layout of a house, and this morning driving south, naming the roads over the motorway, plotting the geography of Leash, finding I took in more than I had ever wanted to, finding that I carry him clearer than any blueprint.